The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Sportage. When you drive your new Kia Sportage, prepare to be noticed. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Our text number is 51551. Our email address, john@rte.ie. Now, my next guest is a Dubliner who heads up a global organisation called Catholics for Choice. And he joins me now from the organisation's headquarters in Washington. John O'Brien, good morning.
It's very good to be with you on the show, John.
And likewise. John, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I grew up in Dublin, and I think that, you know, the time that I grew up in was the mid-1980s, and it was actually quite a dark time. You had, you know, a stranglehold on politics by Margaret Thatcher and Charles Haughey. We'd just come off a referendum, the 1983 Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, which saw, you know, a series of very, very depressing, very restrictive moves to stop, for example, women who found themselves with unplanned pregnancy being able to get counselling. We even had Cosmopolitan magazine, the women's magazine, with sections blacked out in it so that women couldn't find out about where they could have a safe and legal abortion in the UK. Even newspapers like The Guardian were seized at Dublin Airport. We had a situation where we had the Kerry Babies case, the sad case of Anne Lovett. I grew up in that situation, and many of us really committed ourselves during the 80s to really wanting a different type of Ireland, an Ireland that would be more compassionate, an Ireland that would be more honest, an Ireland that would be more transparent. And I think we especially saw that in relation to sexual and reproductive health.
And John, tell me, during the 80s, were you looking upon these things from a Catholic perspective? Would you have been a mass goer, for instance?
Absolutely. Religion for me has been something that's very important. There's an aspect of social justice within Catholicism that speaks not just to going to Mass on Sunday, although that's an important part of it, but actually to a greater good within society, the preferential option for the poor. It's actually living, trying to live a life, a good life, with a view towards, you know, a spirituality that's beyond just your temporal state or your day-to-day.
And John, so I think you cut your teeth in the condom controversy here in the early 90s. Let's remind ourselves of what was happening in this country less than 20 years ago, or just a little bit over 20 years ago.
It emerged this week that the Irish Family Planning Association is to be prosecuted for the allegedly unlawful sale of condoms at the Virgin Megastore in Dublin. The case is to be contested by the Family Planning Association, and in the meantime, they're continuing to operate their stand. Yesterday, we went down to the Virgin Megastore and talked to the people involved in the affair and asked the saleswoman, Vicky O'Connell, what level of business there was at the stand.
Business is quite good. The people are usually in their early 20s, and there's mostly male customers. We get a lot of people from the country and quite a few married couples.
And would you have people coming back regularly?
Yeah, we do every week, same faces.
Now, do you get any trouble? Do you get any people coming up and abusing you?
No, I don't, but I do get a few disapproving looks off older women, sometimes older men, you know, their kids. But no one's ever hassled me about it.
Do you think it's a bit strange having a setup specially for selling condoms in a record shop?
Well, no, I think there should be more leaflets and stuff, you know. There could be more leaflets and there could be a couple of signs because nobody really knows where it is. Stairs, you know, it's hard to find. But I don't think it'd be strange, no.
And do you ever get people saying to you that you shouldn't be here and that this is an inappropriate place to be?
No, never.
Yeah, and John, you have a vivid recollection of that controversy and you were centrally involved in it. Take us back.
I began working with the Irish Family Planning Association in the mid-1980s. We set up various services for young people because at that time, it's hard to believe, but you couldn't access easily condoms or contraceptives. We went to government because at that particular time, the AIDS epidemic was sweeping the world. So governments were very concerned about how people could protect themselves. At that time, if you were a young person and you were in a discotheque and you met somebody and you were going to have sex, the law wasn't doing you many favours because the law, the Irish solution to the Irish problem under Charles Haughey, actually meant that you would have to go go to a doctor. That doctor would have to agree with you that you wanted contraception for bona fide family planning purposes. You then would have to go to a pharmacist who would have to agree with you and actually have in stock condoms, and then you would get your condoms. The reality is that a lot of younger people weren't going to do that. So we went to government, we spoke to all political parties, and we were told that they thought we were right, but they really feared a belt of the crozier. So what we did was we got on to Richard Branson. Richard Branson, the head of Virgin, at that time had a Virgin megastore on Dublin City's quays. And we got on to him and we said to him that could we sell condoms in his store? And he said we could as long as it was perfectly legal. What actually happened when we opened up, it wasn't young people that formed the queues, it was people from all over Ireland, young and old, who actually came to the Virgin megastore because they wanted to be able to buy condoms without the type of shame, recrimination and difficulty that really the law was giving people. So it was going very well until Detective Sergeant John McKeown, a plainclothes policeman, came into the store and purchased a packet of three, lubricated, non-coloured. And as a result of him purchasing those condoms, we found ourselves in court and really at the eye of a huge storm. People like Richard Branson actually came and testified on our behalf. But it was somewhat ironic that to find yourself in the 1990s, when governments are promoting condoms, we were being prosecuted for the illegal sale of a contraceptive. And that's what we argued. We argued that we were not selling contraceptives. We're actually selling prophylactics, which was rather an amusing argument at the time. It certainly garnered headlines all over the world. To such a point that we were actually found guilty and we were facing huge fines. And it was really quite a scary time as to whether we would lose our license as a family planning association and also whether anyone could face criminal prosecution as an individual. What happened then was rather fortuitous. We got a call from a guy called Paul McGuinness, the then manager of the rock group U2. And he said the boys were very concerned about what was happening and they offered to help us out by paying those court fines, which were rather phenomenal at the time. But we went one further. We said, is there any chance you two could make a comment on this? And the band subsequently released a statement in which they basically said Irish laws on contraception were wrong and needed to be changed. The next day, Charles Haughey was on radio. He was commenting about the chronic unemployment problem we had then. And he was asked what he thought of the case of the Virgin condom. And Charles Haughey, with his eyes on a forthcoming election where the youth vote was very important, said he completely agreed with you two and the law on contraception could change. And subsequently, it did.
So it was a victory, a big victory for you and your colleagues in the association. And obviously, on a personal level, it encouraged you to continue and, in your case, to actually protest from within the Catholic Church.
I think so. I think that I really recognized then that it's really unfortunate the power that some in the Catholic hierarchy tried to exercise over government. And indeed, more importantly, the power that some politicians cede to church leadership when it doesn't really represent the views of ordinary Catholics. Ordinary Catholics use contraception. Ordinary Catholics have abortions at much the same rate as non-Catholics do in many parts of the world. Ordinary Catholics support sexual education for their children. So I think that, you know, the time has come when the Catholic hierarchy are entitled to their view. They're entitled to express it, but the idea that they speak for the Catholic people is wrong. The Catholic Church, the Church is not a building somewhere. The Church is not the Catholic hierarchy. The Church is all of us, and that includes men and women who have quite a different sexual ethic than the bishops do.
So can we take you through then some of the big issues that you would concern yourself with in Catholics for Choice and would be big talking points in the Catholic Church today? The issue of married priests.
It doesn't really make a great deal of sense to have a church that excludes people. Catholicism, as the great theologian said, is actually defined by unity in diversity. So that for me means that when I look around my church on Sunday, I like to see the LGBT couple. I like to see the single unmarried couple who still feel they can come along and go to Mass. I like to see the traditional couple who have a much more conservative view of Catholicism. I think there's room for all of us. I don't think that a married priesthood would in any way do anything other than enhance the leadership in the Catholic Church.
Gay marriage.
I think, again, you know, I feel a great deal of personal sympathy for ultra uber conservatives in the Catholic Church who are in a serious minority. And I think they felt very comfortable under the papacy of Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict. Now they find themselves in somewhat out in the cold. And I think it's unfortunate because I think that that narrow view of what the Catholic Church actually means to people is not one as it's lived by Catholics every day, or indeed it's not the one that Pope Francis has given voice to in recent days. I think that when we look at gays within the church, someone having a right doesn't take away the rights that I actually have.
But John, I mean, every religion presumably has to have its rules, has to have certain tenets. And in this instance, this is what it says. And these are the rules that you it almost sounds as if you might be happier in another religion.
I think that that represents a fundamental misunderstanding of what the Catholic Church actually teaches, John. Church teaching on moral matters are actually very complicated. You know, conscience is not some faraway concept. Conscience is actually the bedrock of decision making within Catholicism. So it's not that you should follow your conscience, it's that you must follow your conscience. It's one thing to have the rules. You've got to remember that the bishops are men, and sometimes they make mistakes. And I think that Catholics really have to follow their consciences when making decisions. That's what Catholics do every day in Ireland and around the world. Catholics do follow their consciences. And, St. Thomas Aquinas, the fathers in the church, would tell us that that's exactly what you do when you're a good Catholic.
Now, John, obviously you're well aware of the legislative change that has happened here recently with the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Bill, allowing for abortions in certain circumstances. Where does Catholics for Choice stand on abortion?
Well, again, church teaching on abortion is actually a lot more complicated than you might be led to believe. And it's a good thing to question what you've heard. What you'll actually find when you look at church teaching, again, is that conscience is a final arbiter in moral decision making. While church law has long thought that abortion is a sin, the reasons for judging abortion sinful have really changed over time. So the idea that the Catholic Church hasn't changed on abortion is just untrue. In fact, through most of history, the church didn't really pay that much attention to abortion except as a sexual issue. So the early prohibition on abortion in the Catholic Church was not based on concern about the fetus. It was actually based on the view that the only people who'd want to have an abortion were people having some type of illicit sex, and that you'd got caught and it was a bad idea that you were having illicit sex. So the ontological view is that the human fetus is a person from the earliest moments of conception. And then there's the perversity view that you shouldn't be having sex outside of marriage. They're the two sort of bedrocks on which the Catholic hierarchy built their particular worldview. Now, the perversity view is not much argued explicitly in the Catholic Church, though it probably underlies a lot of the discomfort that a lot of the hierarchy feel with it. But many church officials now focus on the ontological view, which argues that the fetus is a person from the moment of conception. And subsequently, I think it's important that the last statement on abortion that the Catholic hierarchy made, the 1974 Declaration on Procured Abortion, the Vatican acknowledged that it does not know when the fetus becomes a person. Now, that doesn't mean that an individual bishop who's against abortion doesn't have a different view than I do. But the reality is, being able to sort of definitively claim that you know when personhood begins, the Catholic hierarchy have not been able to do that. In my view, where there is doubt, there should be freedom. And where there is a diversity of opinion, there should be a freedom for every individual in Ireland to follow their consciences. And the shame that Irish women should be forced to go to another country to avail of a service that should be legal, safe, and something that you can actually have at home, I think is important.
And John, do you think that, you mentioned him already, under Pope Francis, the sort of Catholicism that you espouse is more likely to find a home?
You know, it's interesting. There's a certain sense that Pope Francis is just wonderful. And I mean that because I think that the rhetoric, the way people sound, what they say, really makes a difference in our lives. I mentioned so many people that I see every day who feel alienated from the church, who feel that they can't go to Mass on Sunday. And I think a lot of them are actually feeling now, you know, something that maybe what I heard from that priest, that bishop, that ultra-conservative Catholic who told me I was bad, maybe that's wrong. Maybe, you know, good Catholics can come back to the church again, and the church can have those doors that are opened rather than closed to people. And I think Pope Francis brings the hope that certainly the sound of the church and the embrace of the church is a warmer one than we've had under other popes. Whether that translates into change in actual church teaching, I don't know.
And John, the canonizations of Pope John the 23rd and Pope John Paul the second, you'd approve?
I don't know. You know, I look and I think to myself, like, you know, saints in the church. I sometimes think that, you know, I like my saints to be having been established for a long period of time. I think the idea that sainthood is like some type of, you know, gold star that you give someone after a few years of their death maybe is not the best way for the church to invest its time and its energy. Certainly, I find the saints of old to be greatly inspiring. I just find the idea that, you know, contemporary people, as much as I love John the 23rd and, you know, Pope John Paul II was great in bringing people very close with his communication skills. I think that I'm unsure whether I believe just in giving out these gold stars. I sort of celebrate the sainthood that I see in my fellow Catholics every day in their ordinary lives, rather than having, you know, rock star Catholics.
All right. So you think they have to do a bit more, or at least time, a little bit more time would have to pass before they earned their stripes. Catholics for Choice, the organisation you are director of, it's a registered charity. Where do you get your money?
Catholics for Choice receives some of its money from foundations who believe that it's a good idea for discourse in civil society to have organizations that are independent of the government. There's also just ordinary people who just, you know, write a check or call up with their credit card, who donate money to Catholics for Choice.
And John, projecting forward then to 2050, what will the Catholic Church look like in your opinion?
Oh, that's an exciting question. I really am excited with the fact you asked me that. You know, Pope Francis is having this meeting even in a couple of months. It's a synod on the family. And there was this sort of feedback. There was a survey that was done by the bishops. They usually just collect information from one another. And some of the bishops' conferences actually sort of let out the survey to ordinary Catholics to fill in. And what's really interesting is that, you know, all of these things we're talking about that make the headlines every day, Catholics are like, as they say in America, it's a no-brainer. In other words, you don't really have to think about it twice. Of course we should have contraception. Of course we should have a greater role for women within the church. Of course we should have, you know, divorce and remarriage as being something that's accepted. And I think that, you know, even we might see in the next couple of months Pope Francis urging his brother bishops to actually address some of these issues. But I think the church in the future, there's no doubt about it, it will always be a church that's signified by unity in diversity. It will be a church that hopefully the laity and the people's voice will be heard, so that some of the harsh rules that really, you know, were man-made, really man-made, have very little to do with the pastoral, have far more to do with the political. Maybe we'll see those dropping away. And what you won't see is a weaker Catholic Church. You'll see a Catholic Church that I think will be stronger, will be smarter, and will be a much more compassionate place for everybody.
John O'Brien, Director of Catholics for Choice, thanks a million for joining us, and good luck with your job and the tasks, the very difficult tasks, and you'll be well occupied in the near future and the distant future. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks for listening.
Text 51551. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.